Welcome to the Docs Who Lift podcast, where we distill and simplify the complexities of a healthy lifestyle, exercise, medicine, and weight loss. We're excited to bring you a podcast that's a prescription for clinical practice, scientific recommendations, and just real life. This is the Docs Who Lift podcast.
Hey, welcome back to the Docs Who Lift podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Spencer Nadolski, co-host, Dr. Carl Nadolski, super endocrinologist. Today, we are going to be talking all about maintenance on these GLP-1 medicines. Like, what do? Do you stay on your highest dose? Do you try to go to lower dose?
Or off of them?
Do you come off of these drugs? We've talked about some studies in the past where they've looked at the metabolic effects and weight changes when people come off. But there are two new studies, just brand new, that were presented just in the past couple weeks. The Attain Maintain, which is looking at Fundeo, which is orforglipron, after using either semaglutide or tirzepatide. But then there's also Surmount Maintain, where they tried to actually lower the dose of tirzepatide or Zepbound after being on a maximum tolerated dose. So we're going to go over these things. We're also going to go over what we do clinically. It's just really nice to have these randomized controlled trials kind of showing what happens to large population sets. So anyway, that's the deal. What do you have anything to say before we do that?
So, you know, I think we have to remind people, we have podcasts going back a few years on the disease of obesity. We've talked about, really one of my favorite ones is talking about Surmount 4. We're going to talk about that, where they everybody got the medication, lost an average of 21% of their weight, and then were randomized to placebo or maintaining on treatment. So we'll bring that back up again. But I think just to remind people that obesity is not as simple as what people used to think. And there's a reason that this weight maintenance issue is hard. People say the term or the phrase obesity begets obesity. So that pathophysiology of obesity tries to like protect itself. You know, and so you hear people talking about how the area in our hypothalamus that's working against people is trying to bring that weight back up through all those different hormones from our fat cell hormones, our intestine hormones that we're talking about, our stomach hunger hormones, our different brain craving hormones. And, you know, we've talked about how heritable obesity is, but everybody's different. There are some obviously very severe genetic causes of obesity, but there's a lot of polygenic causes and everyone responds differently and everyone maintains differently. Combine that with our environmental factors, other biological factors, medications, going through menopause, we've been talking about a lot lately. And so, it's a lot easier said than done. The obesity loads the gun, the environment pulls the trigger. We live in an obesogenic environment, and it's not just so simple and easy, which is why, you know, I think there's a random or a meta-analysis of trials of like diet and exercise trials, like 29 of them that was recently published, where they showed that something like over half the weight that was lost in those trials on average was regained. And that's because of all those factors. And, you know, we talked with Kevin Hall about how there's a little bit of metabolic adaptation in a lot of people where their metabolic rate's a little bit lower than it should be for that new weight. So just a lot of biological factors working against people trying to pull their weight back up. And what do we care about? We care about people's health. So excess or abnormally distributed adipose tissue that defines obesity that causes health problems.
That's easy for you to say, the guy who had abs and pecs and lats in utero.
Yeah. And we've talked before about how, there are genetics to that too, nurtured certain genetics and everybody's a little bit different. And I think, that's where I think the Surmount 4 trial, I show every patient that because I think it's so cool. Thanks to Deborah Horn, who was involved in these trials, by the way, maybe we need to get her on the line.
Yeah.
Where just to kind of remind people, we talked about this. It must've been back in November because that's
it was a few months
published.
Ago.
So everybody in the Surmount 4 trial got tirzepatide, and just the basics of it are the average weight loss was 21% I think it was 80 weeks. And then they randomized everyone to either stay on therapy or randomized to placebo. So the people thought they were getting medicine, but their weight started to regain. And we make a big deal about highlighting it's on average, because again, everyone's different. Mm-hmm. Whereas
which is going to come into handy when we talk about the surmount maintaining.
Yeah, exactly. And then the people who stayed on therapy, they actually lost a little bit more weight before they maintained. But then when they broke it down to who actually did maintain, who regained what weight, 17% of people were able to maintain most of the weight that they had lost mm-hmm. when they went to placebo. 25% of people regained somewhere between 25 and 50% of the weight that they had lost.
Yeah.
33% of people regained most of it, between 50 and 75% of the weight that they had lost. But then another 25% of people regained more than that, essentially all their weight. And when we look back, it was also, and then some. And those people also were the ones who didn't have as much initial weight loss response, whereas everybody else had about the same average. So those people obviously have a much more severe biological fight that they're working against.
So I finally got to reading Food Intelligence by Kevin Hall. He was on our podcast us about it. But
go buy Food Intelligence by Kevin Hall.
Yeah, it's actually a really good book, because they don't downplay the biological aspect. They really upplay the environment. And the thing is that we don't talk about it as much, because we feel kind of futile, like trying to fix it. It's a very big policy thing. Because if you imagine, if we took some of these people that are regaining weight, and it sounds cruel, but like you just got to imagine transplanting them from some obesogenic environment where you're just surrounded by all the yummy, high calorie, tasty foods, and you put them in somewhere that those things are literally not available. You couldn't even try. You couldn't go down the street and try to buy them. And you're basically surrounded by berries and nuts, seeds, and some other lean protein, and you got to get it yourself. You would have no choice but to lose the weight. It wouldn't be possible.
Right.
So it's kind of an interesting thing. We focus on the biology a lot, but the environment is extremely important. I think everybody should read that book, because he actually goes over in depth of the myths.
Yeah.
Just an aside, because people.
Oh, and he's so
people
good.
Really. Yeah. Like, oh, the Biggest Loser. Your metabolism goes down, though, and your body's trying to fight. It's not the metabolism. It's the appetite component by far. It's not even close, the appetite. And and people really misinterpret his research. So they should read his book, because it's like literally him. And he's like, no, I'm telling you, this is how it's said. You journalists and you lay doctors that are saying your metabolism is trashed. You guys don't know what you're talking about. So go read the book. Let's talk about
literally misinterpreting his stuff.
Approach maintenance.
Okay.
Yeah, they literally do.
Yeah.
And,
so,
and then they call me out on it. Like, you got to read his study. I'm friends with him.
Read his book. Jerks. So, yeah, I think, what the studies we're going to talk about is really just trying to do randomized controlled trials about what we all are trying to do, because there's also a cost issue here, right? So people always say, well, I don't want to be on medication forever. Well, it may be an indefinite med. It's a chronic progressive relapsing disease state. But that's why I literally show them that study that Deborah Horn did, where I say, well, look, 17% of people can maintain their weight. So we're going to do everything we can do to optimize your nutrition, your exercise routines, most importantly, to keep you healthy. But also, if there is a chance, we can pull back or de-escalate, we say, whether it means going off of medication or cutting down on the dose of the medication. And that may require some off-label dosing, just for people to be out there. And so let's say tirzepatide. For those who have a little bit more severe obesity, again, based upon the amount of adipose tissue, but more importantly, the severity of disease, they have diabetes, they have fatty liver with fibrosis, severe sleep apnea, et cetera. They need more than 15% weight loss to get those true health benefits. And so tirzepatide is a good choice. And so, if they lose enough weight to achieve those weight loss and clinical benefits on any of these medications, then we start talking about, okay, what's the cost situation? How are you feeling? How are you tolerating it? I show them those slides. And what I say is, what I don't want you to do is say, all right, I got to my weight stop the medication, come back next year, all the weight's regained, and you have type 2 diabetes and have a heart attack or something. That's the last thing we need. So we want to be very diligent, come up with individualized plans. Maybe we cut the medication dosing. We can change with frequency of dosing, and maybe different medications, which is kind of what the Attain Maintain trial that we're going to talk about, going from either tirzepatide or semaglutide to orforglipron. It's essentially doing like, well, can we use cheaper medications? So, you know, in my world, or probably in your world too, a lot of people can't afford these medications if they're not covered, but they might invest in them at first, achieve very clinically meaningful weight loss, and then we come up with cost-effective ways to maintain. And maybe that's if they can have old school, you know, phenermine topiramate, maybe the bupropion naltrexone if they're the right people, or again, these different types of you know, dosing strategies with these medications, but it has to be personalized, individualized, and you can't just let them go off on an island. I think you're going to talk about, you know, it's sort of monthly follow-ups or check-ins or something. We can't just let people go off and try to do it all on their own.
Yeah, I mean, the gist of what we do is, look, if you can stay on the maximum tolerated dose because insurance is paying for it, you have no reason to come down unless you're having some side effects. Again, we've talked about it's somewhat rare, but we see kind of an anhedonia on these higher doses. Most people do well. And so I don't want to say like everybody's getting anhedonia and kind of feeling blah. It's a smaller percent of the population. But if you're feeling great, literally no reason to come down unless then financially you can't afford it. Or it's starting to break the bank. So then we start getting creative. Maybe we start splitting up their doses. They're on a 15 milligram and they're using the quick pen. Maybe they use 7.5 milligrams then weekly, and they can maintain on that. The issue is when you start coming down, some people simply cannot come down on the dose. And that's why these trials are interesting, because we've been seeing it clinically for Mounjaro has been out since 2022. So we've been seeing these types of things for now, like 4 or 5 years.
Well, I mean, and think about like Ozempic and before that.
Semaglutide's been out since 2016, 2017. Yeah. So 10 years now.
And so before that, in type 2 diabetes and obesity, we had, you know, liraglutide, Saxenda, and other medications. So this is new. It's just we have more powerful tools.
Yeah. And we utilize a lot of non-GLP-1. We use a lot of Qsymia, phentermine, topiramate. Sometimes it's metformin by itself. It helps just a teensy little bit. But topiramate, bupropion, naltrexone, and phentermine.
SGLT2 inhibitors combined with.
You could even, if they have type 2 diabetes, we do the SGLT2s. So that it's the gist. If you want to stay on the highest dose, you can. But if for some reason you want to come down, and it's usually for side effect and financial purposes, sometimes people just want to see like, oh, I want to see if I can do it.
Yeah, which is fine too. We just have to be very careful.
Yeah,
don't let you regain the weight and get sick.
Yep. Like my brother said, if you're coming back in a year and you regained, like we lost the plot because that, you just lost that year of metabolic health improvement. So that's what we do clinically. It doesn't get much more complicated than that. It's close monitoring, helping with lifestyle, and helping take the edge off biologically. So now let's get into what these trials did. I think we should start with, let's start with Surmount Maintain. It's the most, it's the most clinically relevant. People aren't using orforglipron right now as much. Most people are using tirzepatide. So what did this trial do?
So basically this was kind of like, you know, with that background of the SURMOUNT-4. And so the basics of it are like everybody. So they had 441 people enrolled. So they all got tirzepatide, maximum tolerated dose, which is, you know, 10 or 15 milligrams, whatever they could tolerate. You know, still starting at the same titration dosing of, you know, 2.5 milligrams, et cetera. I'm just kind of reading this. If they could not tolerate at least 10 milligrams by week 48, they were not eligible for randomization and were discontinued. So there are those people, of course.
That's,
you know,
interesting.
I mean, right.
It would be more like how much weight did they lose? Because if they lost a clinically meaningful amount of weight.
Well, there was some of that too. They had to lose at least 5% of their weight. And I think my notes in front of me don't necessarily tell me this, but if I did my math correctly earlier, I want to say only like 85% of people did achieve more than 5% weight loss in the first part of the, which is lower than I would expect for tirzepatide. It's, you know, usually more like in the 90s. Maybe you can check my math on that. But regardless, you know, most people were still randomized to the trial. So basically 140 people went on, stayed on after 60 weeks. So at 60 weeks, you know, they lost a substantial amount of weight. Again, kind of in that 20%.
Yeah, it's about 20. Range. Yeah, it's like a 21 or so.
It's
percent.
Very similar 20, to that SURMOUNT-4 trial.
Yeah, 22%.
Which is pretty typical for average. And again, remember, this is average. We're going to come back to that all the time. That's the average weight loss. So then what they did was they had a double blind weight maintenance period from 60 to 112 weeks. So some people stayed on the 10 or the 15 max tolerated dose. And then 144 people were reduced to the 5 milligram tirzepatide dose. I think that's probably why they, you know, they wanted everyone to be on the higher dose in the first part. Right. They wanted to see if the lower dose worked.
Yeah.
And then another 94% of people were then switched to placebo. And then what basically what we got was how did people do at that point? Now, so that was at 60 weeks. The trial went 112 weeks. And this is where it gets confusing because it would be unethical to not help the people who regained a lot of weight because now we know these data, right? So we know it's really hard to maintain weight. And so they were allowed to use rescue tirzepatide. So rescue tirzepatide was available starting at week 84, so 24 weeks after the randomization, for people who had regained more than 50% of their initial weight loss already. So what do you think of that? Because that definitely throws confusing statistical analysis into this whole thing, in my opinion. But it's a good thing, right? Because if people are starting to regain their weight, that's unethical to not then treat them. It's kind of like the cardiovascular trials where now if we know that these medications reduce cardiovascular risk, you can't just compare it to placebo anymore when they have a really high cardiovascular risk.
Yeah, I think some of these newer trials that I think they're going to start thinking about whether they even need to have a placebo arm. They're going to have to probably start comparing it to standard of care, like something like semaglutide. And this is the reason why people are like, oh, all those vaccines you're taking haven't been compared to a placebo.
Oh, God.
You stupid. I look this up. Like, literally just look up why. It's because you have a standard of care. You can't allow people to just get infected with measles. Like, are you kidding me? Like, God, people are, I can't stand how stupid people are sometimes. And not right. Who listen.
I was going to say, not anybody listening to this. No offense.
Not even this. They know. People are listening to this are smart.
Okay.
All right. So go ahead.
You're trying to be educated. Okay. Anyway, so the primary endpoint was ultimately the change in body weight from week 0 to week 112. So we're going all the way to the end. And so the people who were just on tirzepatide max tolerated dose for the whole time were about 22% weight loss. Then the people on 5 milligrams was about 16.5% weight loss. And then the placebo group ended up at about 10% weight loss from the very beginning. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the difference obviously between the max tolerated dose and the placebo was a 12% weight loss and the 5 milligram group, 6.5% weight loss. But this is where we start getting into some of the nuances. So the max tolerated dose essentially had an average flatness in the second part of the study. But this is where you raised some questions. And when we look at these waterfall plots and you see how that average is distributed, right?
Yeah. Yeah, my friend.
Not everyone was perfectly at 21% weight loss.
She's not a physician. She's a kind of an enthusiast in this. And she posted it and was like, I think this must be because in the appendix, it looks like some people regain and some people lose, but I can't confirm. It is kind of confusing because in the graph, it shows that, these people maintain. In fact, it even shows 100% in this one of these graphs here. It shows 100% average weight loss. But when you go into the bar graph, they start breaking it down into who maintained at least 75 or over 80 or over 85% of their total body weight loss. And when you start looking at that, it's like, well, wait a second. If you look at the max tolerated dose of tirzepatide, which again is 10 or 15 milligrams, the people that kept off 85% of their weight, wouldn't you think everybody in the max tolerated dose of tirzepatide, based on the line graph, would have kept it off? It should be 100, like around 100%.
Right.
But it's only around 72%. So that means that around 30 around
25 to 30. Yeah.
25 to 30% of people on the max tolerated dose didn't keep off at least 85% of their weight. So let's take for, let me just start thinking of numbers. Let's say you're 200 pounds.
This is where people start going, all right, I'm done with
but getting off this podcast. Let's start putting it. Okay. So let's say you're 200 pounds.
200 pounds
you lost, and you lost 40 pounds because that would be 20% of your
20%
weight.
20% of your weight. Yep.
Okay. So then you lost 40. Now down to 160. If you then gain,
here we go.
Okay. Let's say you gained 10 pounds. So 10 pounds of the 40 pounds you lost,
that would be 25% that would be,
that would
of
be 30%
that you lost.
So if you regained 10, if you all of a sudden in the 60, in a year, you regained 10 pounds, you wouldn't, you would have technically been out of that 85%, or so, block. And the reason is, and so this is why my friend Jen, she's on Twitter. She said this first, and then I confirmed with both our friend Dr. Sean Wharton, who was part of this trial,
who's involved in this. Yeah.
And I contacted our medical science liaisons at Lilly to confirm this, because when you look at the appendix, and this is why my brother pulls up the waterfall plots, because it's actually really interesting on an individual level what happens to these people, and you can see that some people are actually regaining, and then some people are still losing. So on average, it looks like everybody kept their weight off if you just look at a line graph, but that's not how it is. And I think that's interesting because everybody just thinks that everybody keeps their weight off. Now, my brother and I talked about this, and I was talking to my new partner at Vineyard, Dr. Mike Albert, because I don't see too many people regaining much weight once they're on the max tolerated dose. I see it once in a while. I would say definitely fewer than 10% of people. I would say fewer than 5% of my patients who are on the max tolerated dose regain past those thresholds that they met. And the usual threshold is 80%, but even they had a more stricter 85%.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think the main one is the 80% that they.
Yeah. 80% is usually what people talk about. So I don't know this would be a really cool, what they call a post hoc analysis. What's going on with these people that they're regaining their weight? Like the one patient we talked about in however many episodes ago, I had one patient that they regained like 20 pounds. I was like, okay, whoa, doesn't happen. And they ended up having uncontrolled hypothyroidism, and it was fluid. It wasn't fat. It wasn't adipose tissue. And that was easily corrected. But then what's going on with some of these other people? Are they not being are they kind of not being checked in on? Are they going to do one of these post hoc analysis? Like, oh yeah, the adherence in these people was a little bit lower. I don't know. We don't know. We don't have the data, but it seems a little bit high. All right. So hopefully that kind of explains this a little bit. Do you want to go into, and some of these placebo people actually did really well. Some of the placebo people.
Yeah. Well, you know why they did really well though?
Guess
what they got after. So they got the rescue therapy.
Well, some of, yeah.
But a lot of them did. If you look at those waterfall
plots. Yeah, a
lot
plots, of them. Most of them.
I mean, almost like, you know, like
two-thirds.
It looks like, two-thirds of people got rescue therapy. And I think that will be published, or that's in the publication. And so, so the rates of rescue therapy were dramatically different. So the max tolerated dose, now, even though there was no such thing, but because remember, these people are blinded, 8% of people received what they thought was rescue therapy in the max tolerated dose. So those people, so that means 8% of people regained half the weight that they had lost, by the way, in the max tolerated dose, right? Because you had to have regained 50% of your weight loss to even be in that rescue therapy. 25% of people in that 5 milligram dose received rescue therapy, and 2/3, 67% of people in the placebo group, obviously, again, and this is an ethical thing. We can't let them just regain all their weight now that we have these appropriate therapies. So those people received rescue therapy, and that actually contributes to why the average weight loss for them was still not bad at 10% weight loss at the end of the trial. And that's still, a good result for a lot of people.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, from a clinical aspect, this is why we monitor people very closely, and we jump in sooner than later, because it can sometimes be harder later after people, regain their weight. It's best to be proactive. I'm lucky I have dietitians. My brother has dietitians as well. And we're trying to keep close tabs on people. And then the other thing is we add in non-GLP-1 medicines and other all sorts of different things to prevent this, or you know, sometimes bariatric surgery or whatever we need to
sure.
do.
Some people require
so
it.
So this is,
you know, or further evaluation. Like you said, if it, you know, I always say when I give talks about other, you know, like secondary causes and you know, in endocrinology, like why, you know, why are people's blood pressures or blood sugars not improving with good therapy, or why are they not losing weight in these therapies? That's where we really have to start thinking about others, you know, maybe some more rare secondary causes. Maybe it's some of the genetic or syndromic obesities, or, you know, mm-hmm. maybe some endocrinopathies, like you said, hypothyroidism, which, you know, we've talked about how that doesn't cause overt obesity per se, but it's not helping anybody if it's untreated or if they have something else going on, or medications. You know, don't forget, people are on other medications that can work against them too.
The other thing I want to point out, and I think they saw some of this, is SURMOUNT-4, when we talked about it before, there are weight independent effects from these medicines. So even if you do keep all of your weight off, if you try to come off these medicines, blood pressure specifically has about a third of the effect. It seems like again.
There's one a lot more important than that. Don't forget.
Look, the blood sugars.
And yeah. So if you have type 2 diabetes and you're taking these for glycemic benefits, it's
right.
These were first approved in 2005, exenatide for type 2 diabetes. And then they were approved later on for obesity without type 2 diabetes. But if, you know, these have dramatic blood sugar benefits and thus a lot of other cardiometabolic benefits with it. So it is, you don't ever just stop this for your diabetes unless talking to your physicians and your team and whatnot. In fact, you shouldn't do that anyways without talking to your physician team.
Yeah, don't do any of that.
Don't do that.
So just for anybody, food for thought, like I want to come off this medicine. There are other things like this would be really hard to know. We don't know what dose is going to be, could potentially prevent, you know, cardiovascular events. Because
a lot of people are
microdosing and using very low doses. Because like, this is the question I have. So if I wanted to take one of these medicines, and I don't want to lose any weight for the love of God, but like cardiovascular benefit from one of a GLP-1 receptor agonist, I don't know what dose. Could I take a small dose and have it benefit me? Or is it really need to be one of these higher doses?
I have an opinion on that maybe we'll do a cardiovascular episode someday. I mean,
cardiovascular.
Okay. Anyways, that's a whole other different topic.
So this is a really cool trial to show what we know, already kind of know clinically, but to put it into numbers and be able to show like, hey, these medicines are meant to be chronic and most people will probably have to take the higher dose, but not everybody.
Not everybody.
No. Yeah. And you just sometimes you have to trial it. Maybe someday our buddy from the 23andMe podcast, he can develop a test to where we can know who could come down and who not. But in right now, we're just doing... We trial it with patients and we jump in and try to adjust their dose back up if we need to. So let's get into the attain maintain because that is trying to switch people over to orforglipron.
Yeah. And we did do a whole podcast on orforglipron, right?
We've talked about orfo many times. My brother is a Lilly speaker for them, so he knows a lot more.
I got a part-time job, so I got to be careful about that now. So yeah, I'm actually literally chilling out. So I'm doing a part-time gig, teaching other doctors about orforglipron. So I don't know. Hopefully this is not illegal. but this is a good trial. So, and it's interesting. So when we do those talks, you have to stay so strict to the label and the slide. So we can't even talk about this stuff, but this is our podcast. So I can talk about whatever I want.
I think so, but you know, the rule.
We'll see when I get fired. All right. So, so the basics of this, so the SURMOUNT-5 trial, if people want to go back and listen to that or look it up, that was the big trial that compared tirzepatide or Zepbound to semaglutide or Wegovy. And it showed a significant difference of about, let's say, I don't have it in front of me, but 15% weight loss. You know, so there's a difference between those two.
Yeah. There's a 30.
And so what we're talking about before is how, for whether it's for cost or because people don't want to take shots anymore, or maybe it'll end up being an insurance coverage issue or something like that. We, people want to potentially change to different types of therapies. Orforglipron is a GLP-1 receptor agonist. It's the only one that's not a peptide so far. So that's why you can take it by mouth and you don't have to worry about, you know, whether you take it with food or water or what time of day and that sort of thing. Because it doesn't have, you know, it's not a peptide, so it's not getting digested and becoming.
Yeah, Dr. Wharton, we had Sean on here talking all about it.
Yeah, we talked about it. And so, you know, it in of itself is approved for obesity, and I would expect it soon to be approved for type 2 diabetes because of its, again, its GLP-1 dependent glycemic effects. It's talk about max tolerated dose. Its max tolerated dose average weight loss is just over 11% or so. Okay, so that's kind of in that good response to therapy, achieves a lot of good goals for people with lower severity of obesity, et cetera. But the question is, would that be an option? Or of course, it's from the same company, from Lilly, after people lose a substantial amount of weight on tirzepatide. Or in this case, what they did was they added it to people who finished the SURMOUNT-5 trial. And so the people who got
tirzepatide or semaglutide.
Yeah, so either one. And so then they randomized people to orforglipron versus placebo. And, you know, they started at the low dose and dose escalated every 4 weeks. People were still getting all their diet and exercise lifestyle counseling. And then this is another one. In the placebo group, they actually were offered orforglipron at week 24 for the same thing. So if they had over 50% regain on the placebo, then they were given that. And essentially the top line, the basic results are that the people who went from tirzepatide to orforglipron, they maintained about 75% of the prior weight loss on average compared to 49% with placebo. And then the semaglutide group maintained about 80% compared to 30% with placebo. What I think, if you look at the graph, I think it's interesting. They all ended up kind of having about the same weight loss at the end. I don't know if you have that graph.
I'm looking at it right now. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah. So obviously because, you know, tirzepatide had more weight loss in the beginning, you know, about somewhere in that, like I said, that, you know, 22% or so. And then, so they had a little bit more regain on average compared to the semaglutide group, which seemed to, you know, maintain the weight on the orforglipron all the way at the end of the trial. And I just think that's interest, but it's, but I this think is a good, you know, this is a good thing, but it's not perfect by any means.
Yeah. I we love Lilly, we love Novo, whatever. It doesn't really matter because we just want to help our patients achieve the best health at the best weight for the least amount cost possible in terms of the therapies. And Fundeo, unfortunately, is not. It's not cost efficient right now. I don't think enough bang for the buck. So I think they're going to need to figure that component out unless it's a big insurance play
direct. So who knows about coverage and stuff? Yeah, I think
because it's possible.
We'll see.
We may see some deals in the back end because of these trials. We may see some things where, we're going to have to switch you to Orfo and the insurance is going to make
like
you
that.
Do
who
it.
Knows? Who knows?
I could totally see it. Because from a direct-to-consumer, it starts at $150 and goes up to like $300 a month. And it's like, I don't know if that's worth it because we already have, we got some tirzepatide that's a little bit better than that. So anyway, I think it's a cool trial. I think the other thing, I like your insights about Orfo in terms of, this is separate. This isn't about maintenance, but it's like, who would be a good candidate for Orfo? And maybe some of these patients that don't need as much weight loss, like we can talk about retatrutide a little bit as well, and we're going but like people are in my comments right now because it's not approved yet, but people are getting called gray market research peptides with retatrutide, and these are people that probably shouldn't even be on a GLP-1 receptor agonist, let alone a triple agonist GIP and glucagon, and they're basically they're shredding their body down to where
who knows
fine.
I mean
maybe it's fine, I don't know.
maybe but the thing is we don't know, and then that's why we recommend against this. First of all, I would not take any drug that has not been FDA approved. It just blows my mind that all these people are out there injecting peptide drugs that have either been dismissed because their trials showed you know, Big Pharma didn't pick them up because their trials showed signals of harm. So they didn't keep studying them in humans. Some don't have any human data.
No human data.
And then some, they're allegedly for research purposes only, like retatrutide, and it's going to be very, very powerful, and it's going to have the phase 3 trial that we already shared online presented at the ADA in a few weeks, and
trials
probably online at the same time, with extraordinary weight loss and a pretty decent safety profile. But God, why I can't believe people would take drugs that are not even approved yet. But whatever. I mean, everyone, that's amazing to me. How many people
are doing
it? We're not
going to stop you.
It's a free country. You know, people do all sorts of illegal stuff.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean it's
good. So, okay. Well, I think this kind of explains our way in with trials, how we do maintenance. Again, we actually at Vineyard, we get a ton of people for maintenance, because it's like, okay, we have a strength coach, we have our dietitians, and we will adjust and do all sorts of things in real time for each person. And I guarantee you that's what my brother does in his clinic. It's just kind of standard of care, good obesity practice medicine. But now we have the data to show, like, okay, you can try to go at a lower dose. You can try to come off. Very few people will be able to come off and maintain their weight. It can happen.
Maybe about 17%, apparently.
Yeah, apparently.
It seems to be pretty consistent, somewhere between 15 and 20%.
I believe those are the same percent of people that it's about the same percent of people who lose about 15 or more percent total body weight without any drugs.
In the placebo arms with diet and exercise. Exactly. Yeah. Yep.
It's about
the
same.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And so when you look
15% of people don't have that bad of obesity biology working against them.
Our favorite lifestyle studies, the DPP and the Diabetes Prevention Program and the Look Ahead, it was about 15% of people were able to lose about 15%. So I have a feeling these individuals don't have as much of the biological disease component.
And they just needed their diet and exercise routines and education and and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Because we all need to do that. Everyone needs to do that. And everyone needs to strength train, by the way.
So the other thing, as I want to say, is there are so many doctors out there, obesity doctors, who are staunchly like, obesity is a disease. Everybody needs medicine, and you got to stay on the medicine forever. Well, it's clearly not true.
Right.
However, the majority of people will likely require that. I think
But if you don't go extreme, then you don't get the likes and the clicks, which is why I suck online.
Well, and that's why this podcast is very low rated. No, I'm kidding. It's high rated. Make sure that if you're listening to this, please go give us some ratings. Like, I see some of these other people that don't even have whatever, and we just need more rating. It's a whole thing. So please, if you're listening to this, we're begging you. And Fairlife, I want Fairlife and some of these other people to sponsor us. We don't need just Big Pharma.
I have a whole list of
we don't have any sponsors. So if anybody's listening, we're taking
sponsors. We are very particular about who's we've had lots of offers from supplement companies, but we're definitely not going to BS.
I'm not going to like a branch chain amino acid or whatever the hell.
Scientifically sound pharma, but anyways, whatever.
Yeah. All right. Anything else? I think that kind of explains our maintenance.
No.
I think it's
good. I think bottom line is lifestyle, nutrition, exercise, and very personalized dosing strategies and alternatives as far as pharmacotherapy medications for people. And you have to work closely with your physician, your healthcare professional team. To make sure that you don't regain and you're optimizing your health. It's literally what's on the inside that counts. So don't forget that.
Yeah, and if cost is an issue, talk about lowering the dose. If you need to split your quick pens and whatever you need to do, and every other week, there's every other week treatment that you might be able to do. All sorts of different and don't forget about the non-GLP-1 medicines. Yeah. I actually have a study.
I have a lot of people doing that.
That we're I don't think it's published yet, but looking at some of the non-GLP-1 medicines in maintenance. So it's an option. Anyway, if you think this would help out a friend, family member who's thinking about maintenance, or anybody that has questions about maintaining their weight once they get down to where they want to be, or even if they're not where they want to be, but they're okay maintaining that weight, make sure you send them this podcast and go give us a review on Apple or Spotify or wherever the heck you're listening to this. Here's our outro.
This podcast is for entertainment and education and information purposes only. Remember, the physicians on this podcast are not your physician. It should not be considered professional or personalized medical advice. It should not be used to replace speaking with your physician or medical professional to discuss your specific health concerns. The topics discussed should not be used solely to diagnose or treat any condition. As a result, we are not responsible for any unwanted medical outcomes. The views and opinions discussed are of those of the host only and do not represent those of any other entities. We'll be right back.